Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news Monday evening. Edwin is with me again. Hi, Edwin. How are you going?
I'm doing well, Martin. That the crazies are out, and you and I said it's going to get crazier till the end of the year. But look, if you can't educate the locals, if you can't educate the local crazies, import them, they say.
every week when I come on and do this show with you, I'm just amazed at the sort of the noise that's out there, but also some of the, you know, the fundamental things that we're seeing. You know, more pressure on households, of course, because of the higher interest rates, which is now being reported in the mainstream. Politicians taking particular views, trying to sort of score a point and what have you. And then, of course, drawing comparisons or not between what's happening here locally and overseas. So it's a mess, isn't it, really? It's a mess.
Oh, look, it's a mess, but you come back, but help to get a good laugh as well with all the crazy stuff. It's not, you know, it's not, do as I do, but do as I say, right? But when you look at some of the skill sets of some of these people that are telling us what to do, they've actually got no idea. Right? I mean, I thought it was poignant. I thought it was interesting just to see your PM just trying to knock a nail in a piece of timber there or whatever he's knocking in, and that was a parallel that to what we're going to talk about later on as well with the current political call to import the workforce that we require, which is in the construction industry. As I say, it's not about spending more money on educating our locals, it's about importing. But one thing for sure, Martin, one thing for sure in this crazy world, I can tell you one thing, is that we're not going to be importing builders or tradespeople from England if that's your standard that we see there on the video of your PM.
No, I have to say that Bob the Builder, of course, very famous kids program, if that's the best the PM can do. But it is remarkable. The whole concept of we have a migration problem because we don't have enough people, don't have enough places for people to live. So what we'll do is we'll migrate in more builders to be able to build more houses to accommodate the migrants that are coming in. I mean, I made a show the other week saying that's a bit recursive, isn't it? Okay, let's solve the problem by bringing more migrants in. How does that work, Edwin?
Oh, look, that's the thing. It doesn't work out, right? And then you've got the scenario, the situation where you've got who are the builders gonna import? When you drill into what they're talking about, it's really bringing tradespeople, not necessarily builders. And from what region? From where are they gonna? That's also something that, you know, that needs to be clarified, because the people that are coming, and as Bob the Builder says, when you get on a job site, he says that you see a lot of these new migrants that have come in and that have been dragged in. They've got no clue whatsoever about our standards. They've got no clue about what they're doing in the first instance, and you know who the newbies are because they come in with with brand new nail bags strapped to the waist and brand new shiny tools. You've got one person amongst 15 that leads them, and it's just open for more rorts. And as you say, it's you know, as you said before in your post as well, on YouTube, that bringing more to build houses, but as you bring in more to build, you've got to build for them as well, and it's just reoccurring nightmare. It's deja vu, it's Groundhog Day, whatever you want to call it. It's just interesting, but then again, there's a lot of noise, there's a lot of crazy stuff happening out there. There's your $7.1 million auctions happening over at Bondi Beach of an apartment that requires requires about 1.1 or $1.5 million in rectification work, and I think there's also a $1 million outstanding strata levy fee, and so forth. I mean, the mainstream media picked up that auction and ran with the the person that bought it and how much they pay. The interesting thing about that article, Martin, is the which a lot of people don't really talk about, is the fact that there were six active bidders. So it's not only just one individual that went beyond the $4 million reserve. I mean, I don't know how many were chasing the winning bidder, but and from reading the story, it was increments of 50,000 and above that. So it was running wild, it was running hot. So the interesting thing, as I said, is that there were six active bidders amongst the 13 or so that were registered. So there's not a crazy amongst the bunch. There were six crazies in that crowd that were prepared to pay well and truly above the 4 million reserve. The auctioneer was shocked, the agents were shocked, I mean, the general public were shocked, but that's the kind of money that's flowing out there. This is what a lot of people don't seem to grasp, the idea of the fact that how much money is still on the sidelines ready to come in and ready to, and they just, many are waiting. And some have waited all 2023, for the mortgage cliff, and they will continue to wait. But one thing for sure, you keep on piling in the numbers from overseas, you keep on bringing in the numbers, you keep on opening up borders to foreign investors, and as the numbers on market, the supply is reduced predominantly in Sydney because it's a different story in Melbourne. Mm. Well, what do you expect? People are in panic mode. So it's not only there, but it's also happening over in the West Market, where now I was at an auction on Saturday that I attended on Saturday, and I just saw a house that was built in the late 70s, renovated, albeit was nice renovation, on a main road, on a busy street in Kings Langley. It sold for $1,768,000. Two Silent Tiger families. We're going toe-to-toe with a WeChat chatterer. And this is what I keep on saying. There's a lot of money still on the sidelines wanting to come in, and people are panicking. And this a lot of this, what the government's doing, what they're doing and what they're not doing, is basically fueling the market predominantly here in Sydney, because it's a different story, as I said, in Melbourne.
No, it is interesting, Edwin. And, there's a lot of conflicting signals. I mean, there was an article showing more locations where property prices have moved over $1 million on average, So prices are still, and in fact, a report that said in some places they've got all-time peaks. And this is because, of course, the policy settings that we've had, as we've discussed quite a few times. But, I mean, there's more broadly, there's a bunch of stupidities going on. I thought this was quite an interesting one. An article in the Financial Review pointing the fact that major lenders are now starting to look at customers' spending behavior and looking at, for example, as to where you shop to try and identify customers most at risk of home loan hardship. So the hardship story is right there in front of us. And just pursuing that for a second, it's interesting that there's a report now saying that Westpac and NAB are going to hike rates again. That's, of course, because the cost of capital is rising, so there's potentially more pain then, even if the RBA doesn't move again in December. And ANZ also showed that late loans are increasing and, the arrears are rising. And the agency at Fitch considers all loans more than 90 days behind as in default. So you can start to see there that there's a 92% increase in the size of 60 to 89-day loan arrears. In other words, things are going to get worse from a financial perspective. So all of these things together are the other side of the coin. So on one hand, you've got this stupidity where you've got still some people bidding up prices and looking at new records. On the other side of the equation, you've got some households in severe financial stress and distress because of the high interest rates. And, it's very hard to marry those two sides of the story together.
It is, Martin, and this is where I failed to send you a tweet I posted up on last week, and that was looking at the week in review, and this is what I got for this week, and along the lines and the thread that you're talking about, what the banks are doing, what they're looking at, and why they're looking at how people are spending the money, based because obviously they've got a high stakes with the with mortgages and so forth. So in Regent's Park, right? So this is just chatter amongst the agents that I talk to on a weekly basis. So in Regent's Park, there's an agent, one particular agency, one of the biggest agencies there in that region. The licensee says that there were five valuations this week so far that came back with paraphrasing his words, with values didn't value the property at contract price due to buyers paying $40,000 to $80,000, in overs on emotion. So that's what's happening out there. And you and I have said for a number of months now, this is the time where you've got to be careful, especially when you're going toe to toe with investors, or you're going toe to toe with builders, or you're going toe to toe with deep pockets from whatever nationality, and you've got two families coming buying a house because of the lifestyles and so forth. This is where you've got to be careful. So most of those valuations that came in short, they were from first-time buyers. So the banks are watching closely, because they're not paying at times, uncertain times like this. They will not be paying the overs on emotion. Now, Regent's Park, obviously the average house value values there for the older fibro homes, or even your brick veneers, your older style, somewhere in that region, somewhere housing commission, the majority were return servicemen's cottages that were given out to the return servicemen of World War II. So you've got these, they're averaging around the 750 to 800 to 950, depending on the size of the block. So, but this is what's happening, and this is where people have got to be really, really careful. The banks are watching very carefully. Obviously, a lot of people still got this notion that the valuations are independent, the third party, which is bullshit. I've said for many years that the banks instruct the valuers on how to value, because they know what type of LVR they've got, and they know the risks that they're going to be taking. And I've even had myself, when I was in the position, when I had the office and I've had sales, I've had the same valuer value the same property over a period of 7 to 10 days, and it's come up with two different figures because of the bank's instructions. I mean, you and I know this shit, Martin. You know and understand this as much as we get pulled over the hot coals and get told otherwise, and that, how dare us say that, because that's not what happened. That's what happens. So in Granville, there was a winning bidder, and the winning bidder, after paid above the vendor's bid, $50,000 above the vendor's bid, he walked away. Subsequently, I've had further discussions with the agent, and it seems at this point in time that young man that placed the highest bidder on the day and basically bought the property, he may not have capacity. In Maryland, you've got agents fiddling and trying to buy properties off elderly families. There'll be a case coming up very soon. Fair Trading are chasing this licensee in charge from this office. So you've got all these shenanigans, you've got all these things, because why? Because a number of reasons. Well, people are becoming very, very desperate, and they'll do, particularly agencies and offices, they'll do all sorts of crazy things. They'll diddle with the trust accounts. They'll do they'll play around with monies that's not theirs, albeit they say, oh yeah, but I'm due the commission anyway, the property is not going to settle. I mean, hence the reason why we've got trust accounts, and hence the reason why there are regulations around trust accounting and forth, and we've got to adhere to it. But this is what's going to happen. You're going to get all these sort of things, but this is what the mainstream doesn't really portray, or doesn't really talk about. They don't really want to talk about. You can talk about the chest beating auctions out there, but this is reality. This is where you've got to be extra careful when you're going out there and bidding on auctions, or when you're coming in, as we're going to talk about later on as well, as you said, the people that have been sacrificed and that have really been, really got sold the biggest lemon out. You and I spoke about when SCOMA was selling the first home buyers grants and everything around it, and then that was SCOMA and Co Real Estate Office, and then we got Albo and Partners Real Estate Office doing the same shit. And the ones that suffer are the young people, are the first, youngsters, the first home buyers, and that's what your surveys of have been showing. So you've got all these scenarios happening. You're in the mountains. There've been some homes that have been raided. Where in one particular home, the police got something like 300 marijuana plants, and they were using the rental properties as hydroponics. But this is desperate times. People will do all sorts of desperate things. Get worse. Obviously, just about everywhere else, you've got. You've got crazy stuff happening with underquoting and so forth. But this is where you and I have been saying, Martin, is there's three sides to a coin. The heads, the tails, and then there's the rim, and everything else in between. So our followers, our viewers, they're a lot more astute and a lot more open to going with eyes wide open when they go into property transactions. But there's a lot of people out there that are doing all sorts of crazy things. But yeah, like you said, there's a lot of these things aren't particularly followed up, or you don't get a lot of greater voices, or these things aren't commonly shared in posts across your social media platforms, because it's not the right thing to talk about, right? But this is where the rubber meets the road.
Absolutely. Well, that's one of the reasons why we did our shows, to perhaps provide an alternative voice, and a very important voice. And talking about the uncertainty, if you look at the WeChat chatter, there's a fair amount of uncertainty there too, isn't there?
Yeah, look, we've got we've got a lot of uncertainty happening at the moment in China. They don't know whether they're going to be. This is international chatter from the WeChat chatter groups that Dusty monitors over there. And converses with on a regular basis, and there's a lot of uncertainty in the main capital cities with regards to this new is it a virus? Yeah, but it's some sort of respiratory disease that's going around, and they don't know whether to lock down or not lock down. Obviously, if they lock down, then it's we're back to. Back to 2020, back to 2021, and watch the supply chains, come to stagnant halt again. It's going to be interesting, but obviously it's going to impact their economy a lot. But what does that mean for us, right? What does it really, really mean for us? And this only hits home what you and I have been saying, and what the WeChat chatters have been telling us, and what we've been sharing on our posts, and that is that. Anybody that's already taken money out of China, there is no way that they want to take the money back into China, sell the assets abroad, and take the money back to China. Secondly, you've got a lot of a lot of Chinese that have obviously taken money out of China over the years, and will continue to take. Those that are well connected will be able to take money out of China, as hard as it is, as very, very hard as it is. So you really got to have high connections, and got to be in a in a top tier in politics and in banking in order to be able to take money out at this stage. But they certainly don't want to take it back home. So if they can't park it in other Asian countries, and if other parts of the world are certainly not going, not looking that as good as they may have been a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. We are a very favorable and desirable destination, Martin. And this is what I keep on saying. You've got to follow the WeChat chatter index very, very closely, understand what they're doing, what's happening with it, where they're buying and why they're buying and what they're buying and with how much are they buying, and not stupidly chase them on the deals. Yeah, you know, as look, here's a tip for some of the people that come across the WeChat chatters, or if you're in an area where it's a hot area for overseas Chinese chatter money, and that's coming in, and you just got to get away from the polished, glossy. Properties, single level with split level with your possibility to have in-laws accommodation, because you're just not going to be able to compete with them. Chase the older properties that have got that require a lot more work to them, and if they something that's got a lot of steps, they don't really particularly like steps. Because they've got their in-laws or the parents, as well as the in-laws, living with them or coming over to live with them in order to combine all their incomes, and hence the reason why they'll pay crazy money for those properties that would accommodate three groups of families, three families in under the one roof. So that's how it affects us. And whilst these numbers in Sydney, I'm talking about predominantly because that's my backyard. Whilst these numbers remain low, the listings on market remain low, this is where you've got to be extra careful as well. Adding fuel to that fire is the local chatter, which was hot over the Black Friday long weekend, or the Black Friday weekend, shopping weekend, where there's a lot of local chatterers obviously come in with a pathway to permanent residency because of the medical profession or medical qualifications, and they got posted out in the country or regional areas of New South Wales and Victoria in order to as I said, in order for that to obtain permanent residency and citizenship here in Australia. There's a lot of frustration amongst that group. Because of it's become harder and it became more noticeable this Black Friday weekend, because a lot of the goods that they were anticipating to buy, particularly through the Chinese websites that supply goods here locally as well, they weren't able to get a lot of goods, and a lot of goods were there was no real discounts, and the finding it shipment to these regional areas have become harder and harder, and slower as well. So the chatter amongst the groups that Dusty tells me from those areas, from the regional areas, and these are medical professionals, right? At all levels, and all these people they were saying that they're looking to come back to Sydney once the tenure of the post once they basically comply with the regional post, the tenure there that they have to comply with in order to get the PR, then they're looking at moving closer to Sydney predominantly and Melbourne, and also for the other reason that as they're boarding their extended families, the children, the majority of the children have gone past the kindergarten, infancy, school, primary school years, and now they're looking for better locations in the capital cities. And if you're looking at the city market, again, because of the low numbers on market, it just adds fuel to that fire. And again, I'd say that Sydney's not a really big market in comparison to a lot of other cities. When you compare it to a lot of other international cities, it's not a very big market. And at the end of the day, we don't have tens and tens of thousands of freestanding homes on market. And this is the pain that the locals have been feeling in trying to compete against foreign money, local chatter money, and investors and everybody else because of the low stock on market.
Absolutely. And I think those dynamics are really important to understand, and certainly are seeing quite a lot of flux at the moment, I think is a good way to put it. And talking about flux, of course, going back to that 10K, just to tell the story slightly more detail, the idea is that we're going to add a 10K to import a builder, new call on Canberra to ease the house price pressure. As we said, stupidity squared, right?
Oh, look, it's deja vu. And, you know, is it deja vu, Groundhog Day? It's just everything, you know, that you can think of. It's just sheer craziness. All this is going to do is going to bring unqualified people. I mean, our government really thinks that the rest of the world are all squeaky clean when it comes to organising, you know, certificates or work histories or, in order to come out and qualify. All it is just going to line the pockets of a lot of your companies that have got connections overseas, abroad, and particularly in India, Malaysia, China, in other parts of the world. I mean, I'd like to see more Europeans come over. I'd like to see, albeit, that we do have some good tradespeople in South America as well. But look, at the end of the day, Martin, what's been showing up to the work sites, as Bob the Builder says, it's really dismal. And if that's a standard that we're going to bring in, why isn't that money spent with local trades groups here to incentivize them to put on more apprentices or make TAFE a lot more enjoyable and a lot less burdensome than I know, two young Sparkies that got up to, the third and fourth year, and they just quit because it just became so grueling, and it was hard for the employers to continue to carry them, because and yet you can come over with bogus paperwork from overseas and hook up, and wire up houses. It's crazy stuff. It's really, really throwing money at the wrong, in the wrong area. Look at what we've done. Look at what the state governments have done to TAFE, or the New South Wales state governments have done to TAFE over the years. They've absolutely decimated it, and by privatising everything else, all you've got is even David Chandler was going around to a lot of the private providers not too long ago, and checking on their books, because they were just handing over different types of licenses hand over fist to people that couldn't even speak the language, didn't even know what tools to use on site. They called themselves gyprockers, and they wouldn't know what a piece of gyprock was.
Absolutely, and that's a big issue. And we should mention that Bob the Builder is one of your contacts up in Newcastle, who's right in the industry. I mean, one of the things about this show, Edwin, thanks to the contacts that you and I have, is, we're able to get on the ground input, and we appreciate all of those who, throw us our little ideas and thoughts and information, because it really helps to make this real for the viewers here. But this is a really important point. Why aren't we investing better in training the locals so that they can actually do the work? And I also think there's another issue, because, of course, the cost of construction is rising significantly. And in fact, I was looking at some data the other day that showed that it's much more expensive now just to build everything. And some of that's to do with the fact we're building more high-rise, but I also think it's perhaps something to do with the regulatory frameworks that we have, the specializations that the various entities have now pushed for. So there's a whole bunch of inefficiencies within the building and construction sector, which is also part of the problem.
Yeah, look, there is. I mean, you've got the new NCC, as we spoke about. We told our viewers from 12 months before it came into to be enacted. We spoke about BASICs, the changes to that, and what that meant for the industry as well. We spoke about a lot of issues, and a lot of this comes from our contact Bob the Builder, because he's a he's a big operator or manager slash foreman in some major works, both for government and private, so we're ahead, and these are things that that you're not being sent for over 18 months, although a lot of people, and even the government officials were saying, no, we're going to import more, and obviously that's going to reduce the cost and everything. Yeah, but you're importing the wrong type of people. You're bringing in the wrong type of migrants that don't want to work in the industry. And with all these legislative changes, the regulations, the standards, places are going to get smaller. They're going to get costlier to build. Obviously, if you want more space, you pay more for it. Not too long ago, you could say rule of thumb to build was anywhere between 1,700 to 2,500 for a fancy swanky new build. Now you'd be lucky to get you'd be lucky to get a quote that's per square meter as a rule of thumb. Now you'd be lucky to get a quote of 4.5 to 4,700 per square meter, providing everything's hunky dory, and then you can add to that to those costs, and let alone renovation. Try to get a lot of tradespeople now for smaller projects. They don't want to know you. They don't want to touch you. They don't want to know you, because even the government's throwing a lot of money at your tradespeople because of the different government works that are happening. In the infrastructure that they, they've lagged, they're about 7 or 8 or 10 years behind that they've got to catch up on in order, because there's an election coming up, and so forth. So all these things just fuel and fuel what's happening, fuel the pain, and is it any wonder that the major parties, the popularity is just going down the drain, and it, so it should be. It's like I said, Martin, I'm sorry, but some of our viewers may not want to hear it, but things are only going to get worse. And until we get some sort of a revolution as well here in Australia, it's not going to get any better. The things, in my view, they're not broken yet. There's a lot of pain, but it's not broken yet. It's got to break before you can really fix it properly.
Well, I think that's right. I think a lot of people, in fact, Chris Joy writes an article saying that 2024 is going to get significantly worse than 2023. His argument was a lot of households had savings and savings buffers, but they're being dissipated very quickly. So next year is going to be a real problem, and interest rates will probably stay high, et cetera, et cetera. But going back to the political angle, did you see this from Andrew Bragg? So on the conservative side of politics, of course, arguing that what you should be doing there is offsetting the cost of your mortgage by using the superannuation balances. Now, hang on a moment. Those superannuation balances are actually invested in the market. So you're already getting returns on your superannuation. If you actually do an offset thing, you'd have to then not get growth on your assets. Otherwise, you'd be effectively double counting. So I'm not sure that this is more than a bit of a political virtual signal, but I thought it was quite an interesting observation.
Yeah, look, it is. And this is like all these things. What else? Like you and I just, can anything shock us, Martin?
No, nothing.
I'm telling you, I'm telling you, sooner than later, we're going to get. It's going to be a dual role for politicians. You've got to get a real estate license, as well as some sort of diploma in politics. Do they have any diplomas at all? I don't think so. But I think it's going to be mandatory. One of those mandatory requirements. To set up a political party, you've got to have a corporation real estate license in order to set up a new political party. That's just me thinking aloud.
No, I think you're spot on. In fact, the AFR in their coverage said, as more homeowners battle to cope with the Reserve Bank's interest rate rises, the Liberal Party struggles to attract younger voters. So, they've already made the point. It's actually a connection there with politics and trying to attract younger voters. So, this is, again, politics in action.
Yeah, it is. And this is where I think, was I got to go back to the post that you put up earlier on with regards to the, throwing the youngsters under the bus. Yeah. They're being thrown under the bus. They're being sacrificed. They're being thrown under the tram lines, the new tram lines you name it. They're being thrown out of, the planes, whatever, you name it. They've just been, it's like they've been thrown into a massive tumble dryer with lots of stains in them. But you and I said back when ScoMo and his crony, you know, ScoMo and Co Real Estate were propagating how great it was, how great it would be, like how, you know, the federal government were going to support this, grants for this, you know, JV venture partner agreements for that, and back then. You and I said that all this means is that the young people, the youngsters wanting to come into the market, the first-time buyers, were the sacrificial lambs. And lo and behold, this is it. This is what all these polls that you shared on that video have shown.
Yeah.
What you and I were very adamant and we're very clear on would happen. And this is all based around the people that jumped into the market from 2020, basically late 2019 onwards, because of electioneering, politics, throwing money left, right, and center. But they don't get taken to task because they've got no certificates to practice as politicians. They've got no licenses to practice as politicians. So this is what, maybe it is a good idea that if you do want to become a politician, anybody going to be accepted as a politician moving forward, they should carry some sort of a license so that they have PI insurance, private indemnity insurance, and we're able to sue them for the bullshit that they tell us, and the aftermath that gets left behind when they move on, with their yearly pensions and retirement funds and so forth. It's crazy.
Absolutely. Maybe we should have an indemnity against politicians. Maybe that's the way to go, right? So insure yourself against political action. That could be quite popular. Let's look at the numbers, Edwin, because the numbers are actually quite interesting. You made the comment earlier on that Sydney and Melbourne are going in, well, hugely different directions. But if we look at Sydney first, so this is from the 16th, right? 17,667, right, on the 16th. If we then jump forward to the 20th, 17,206, and then on the 27th, 16,506. So we're starting to see a bit of a downturn in terms of the Sydney listings, which I suppose is what you might expect at this time of year, given the proximity of Christmas, but it's definitely turning down now.
Yeah, and remember when we started calling the downward trend for the Sydney listing numbers, remember everybody else was saying that there's a surge of listings, there's more to choose, more this, more that, and again it was really a call to get people that have been sitting on the sidelines to go out there and continue to bid, and maybe by getting more publicity around the higher sales in the areas, then obviously you're going to get more people that were sort of thinking about selling to put their properties on the market in order to feed the industry, because the industry, if there's no sales, there's no commission. If there's no commission, there's no food on the table. You could say there's no BMWs or Armani suits and the like. So it's something that we weren't seeing it. We weren't seeing it. Our mate Tom was putting posts, albeit he's hot one day, cold the next. It's all relative to the performance on the weekend based on his auctions. But when he's talking about getting stories from here and everywhere else, I keep on calling him out. I keep on calling him out. I keep on texting him. I keep on asking him. Keep on asking him to come onto our show. Have a discussion, and have a conversation around all these things, because we're not seeing it, and this is where people, again, we were warning people earlier on. We said 5-6 weeks ago, I was saying be careful. It looks, it appears that things are going to start pulling back, and then you've got we had a lot of people started to get a bit tired And we said that, you know, from the looks of things in our conversations, we were going to see an early retreat. So that's what we saw. And I think I just, all I can say is, Martin, that fingers crossed that these numbers don't continue to creep downward, even in the first quarter of 2024. But my gut tells me otherwise. I think that people are going to sit out the first quarter and well and truly into the second quarter again, as we saw in 2022. But this time around, this is purely Sydney, and this is purely across the board. Not necessarily all the suburbs are going to perform the same way, but in general terms, the demand is, for me, it's getting stronger from overseas players, from your chatterers abroad, local chatterers, country chatterers now, and then you've got the Silent Tigers that are, although they've taken a bit of a powder because of the elections in India and what goes on with the ways that they get money from over there, then you've got your new kids on the block, your Vietnamese contingencies coming in now. And it's a lot easier to get money from Vietnam over to Australia, and they've got, you know, the new money is very, you know, very strong. So you've got all these things, all these factors only adding and fueling the Sydney market. And if numbers continue to retreat, well, people have got to be really careful when they go out there, and they've got to bunker down and make some real hardcore decisions as to where they buy, what they buy.
Yeah, obviously the satellite went over and the next one didn't come in time. Good old Elon.
Yeah, look, he has been having a lot of issues at the moment, right? So for some reason it's gotten really cloudy. Could expect another thunderstorm tonight. Who knows? So I've had to go back to good old Telstra.
Okay, good old Telstra. Well, let's just briefly look at Melbourne, because the story from Melbourne's rather different. So on the 20th, there were 26,617, and jumping forward to this week, 26,814. So listings are rising, which is actually quite interesting, and going in a rather different direction, which suggests that maybe the dynamics between Sydney and Melbourne have broken.
Yeah, look, they are. But remember, Martin, remember what this is, where we've got to, this is where a lot of people got to understand also that I really believe a lot of the sales, the new sales coming on, piling on in Melbourne are from investors and some of the people that follow our show that DM me as well, and that also follow me on Twitter. They've sent me direct messages as well, and they've also some of the posts that I put up, they've also others have put up there that because I've asked them point blank. I said, are they from your knowledge of the area and in the suburb that you're living and the more for sale signs that you've seen from your knowledge of your neighbourhood, are these rentals that are being sold, or are these the owner occupiers? And yeah, you know, the majority, 8 out of 10, are investors. But six or so weeks ago, we had the Witcher chatter groups here in Sydney. They were basically talking it out and saying, get out of Melbourne, just get out of Melbourne. Within a week or two, bang, you saw these numbers just rocket up, and they continue to rocket up. And even in the, even if you go by the auction clearance or the auction numbers, the auction numbers for Melbourne have just continued to stay high, and Sydney, a lot higher than Sydney. From time to time, I read, I follow Catherine Cashmore on Twitter, and I read her post and what she has to say, and with regards to the Melbourne market, because she's based there, obviously, in Melbourne, and she knows that market very well. A lot of properties are getting passed in. A lot of properties are staying on market well and truly post auction for a long time. So this is the pile on. And it'll be interesting to see how the state in migration of people is also affecting affecting that market and the Sydney market, because for me, as much as a lot of people don't like hear me say it, but all these just add fuel, and unfortunately put the vendors in a very, very rosy position in 2024. And buyers, they've got to be extra cautious as to what they do. But there's certainly a lot more properties, a lot more supply, greater supply, almost double the number of Sydney. But it's interesting how the mainstream media don't really talk about that, right? It's only just you and I that talk about the difference between the numbers of Melbourne and Sydney.
No, I agree. And again, in my surveys and in my conversations one-on-one, I'm seeing a lot of people in the Melbourne area saying, time to get out, and that's bail. And a lot of investment properties, as you say, and quite a low quality as well. So a lot of the new listings are low quality listings. Let's just quickly look at the rentals for Sydney. So on the 13th, we had 9549 on. On the 20th, it was at 10,232. And on the 27th, 10,817. So a bit of a rise in terms of rental listings.
Look, there has been a bit of a rise, which is a good thing for the Sydney rental market. I reached out to some of the property managers around the traps, and I'm asking them what they're seeing with their rental books. And I know what you're getting from your surveys, Martin, but what they're telling me is that the stories that they're getting from the tenants that are vacating, and they're asking them, because they're not asking for references. And typically when you're moving to another rental, you ask for a reference before to go to another rental. They're moving in and they're sharing homes. A lot of them aren't asking for references because they've got somebody else is the leaseholder, or they're moving in with a friend that owns a home or a relative or that, and it's just the cost of living, and this is what's it's only 3-4 rent rolls in the West that I'm getting this from, albeit one is in more towards the Shire area. But it's interesting, what the property managers are telling me. I don't know what you're getting in your surveys, or whether it's too early to get information from the surveys. But definitely, the cost of living is certainly putting a lot of pressure on people, and we may see a greater rise in rentals. There again, they're just waiting, and obviously, end of year as well. You've got there's a lot of people are going to be spending a lot of money that they don't have. And if they can bunker down and reduce their overheads, the rental overheads by bunkering down with a relative, mum and dad or grandma, grandpa, or friends sharing a home. But certainly the dynamics, around that shared accommodation is going to be interesting. As I said, and as I've shared in previous podcasts, when we came to Australia, I was only about 7 or so, and we lived in a home in Gladesville. I grew up in Gladesville, until my late teenage years. For the majority of the time that we were there, we lived with uncles and aunties, and there was two or three small families at the time living in a big house in Gladesville. For me, the experience was horrible. Others have better experiences, but my experience in that is horrible, and I can only imagine what a lot of the young children are facing, particularly around these times where there's a lot more. They spend most of the time, at least I spent most of my time, I was out of the house at sunrise and didn't get back home until after sunset. On the weekends, out with the local friends, and also during school and after school, I was hardly home. But it was still a horrible experience for me from my lifestyle. But nowadays, that a lot of the young kids don't spend a lot of time, and you've got to be careful as to whether or not you're going to let your children out after in the afternoon anyway. With all the crap that's going around, and they're spending it indoors, so there's a lot more pressures, there are a lot more psychological issues that we're going to hear of in the future. So it's the pain, it's For me, it's just like it just echoes in my head, and I try to try to imagine and try to. I'm sure it's magnified threefold from the issues that I faced when I was a in those early years of my life. I can only imagine what some of these young people are going through. But this is the state that the economy is in, and this is the state that our great politicians have got us into, and I don't know. It's only going to get messier moving forward. I can only think.
Yeah, and going back to my surveys, I have two observations. Quite a few people have given up on renting and moved back with parents, or in fact siblings. So shared houses absolutely part of it. And the other is, of course, that in some cases, those in the rental sector have basically said, I'm going to buy anything. So they're still buying property, which I think could well be a mistake because they're paying top dollar in some cases. But their argument is, at least if I buy something, even if it's not in the right location, it's not very good quality, I don't have the same worries about continual rent rises. But of course, as we've discussed previously, Edwin, if you buy a dog of a property, it remains a dog of a property, and potentially it can be a real noose around your neck later. So unfortunately, I think some of those renters are moving from the frying pan into the fire. But I do think that we're going to see a bit of an uptick in terms of shared accommodation and living with parents and those sorts of things, because people can't afford to find somewhere to rent now in so many areas, and therefore they look for alternative. And just on the rental numbers, while we're talking about that, let's look at the national numbers. On the 13th, 42,045 listed. On the 20th, 43,266. So it isn't just a Sydney thing, it's a national thing.
On the 27th is 47. Yeah, that's almost a rise of 10%, or a bit above 10% in a matter of almost 2 weeks nationally. So it's a good trend.
So there are more property listings for rentals than there were, which is interesting because it's not really being reflected yet in the official statistics that I've seen, but maybe we'll see that a bit later. But the rental market's broken dramatically. Rents are up about 30% from pre-COVID levels on average, some a lot more. Many people I find it really difficult. And my mortgage stress numbers show that, nearly 80% of people in the rental sector now are having difficulty managing those rental repayments. The mortgages are still pretty expensive as well, of course, about half of households in difficulty. But the rental sector is absolutely broken. And I'm afraid migration is part of the problem.
Yeah, it's a good trend. An upward trend both in Sydney and nationally, but we'll just wait and see. Well, but then I'll continue. But don't tell the politicians this, because they'll say, see, there's a lot more rental properties available. We need to bring in more people.
Absolutely right. Well, as you're coming into the show, Edwin, still time for your tip of the week.
Oh, look, this is tip number two for this podcast. But the tip of the week is, don't skimp on insurance, guys. Don't skimp on insurance, particularly with the cost of construction rising. And I'm talking about building insurance. Now, I'm not talking about landlord's insurance. I'm not talking about house content insurance. I'm talking about building insurance, right? Because this is where you've got to get clarity with your insurer as to what you really are insured for. This is more to focus on building insurance, because the cost of construction, the cost to replace a dwelling based on the different legislative standards, the NCC, the BASICs, and everything else. So it may have cost $350,000 to build your home 15, 20 years ago, but now it's going to cost you $850,000 to build the same bloody thing on the same block of land. Based on everything that we've been discussing over the podcast and over the previous weeks. So update your insurance, and also get an insurance from a local insurer, local insurance provider, such as your GIO, such as your NRMAs. I've heard of some swanky insurers out there that some of our clients have been telling me about, and to save a couple of $100 and that, not worth it, guys. Not for what they're going to insure it for, and also the issues that you're going to have, and you only have to talk to the people that have been caught up in those they got flooded in the areas they got flooded, and you know, the areas with natural disasters, and you know, that the insurances that these weird and wonderful online insurers that they take your money quick smart, but they don't want to pay you out, or they'll give you a lot less than what it's going to cost you to obviously get your dwelling replaced. So yeah, insurance. Have a look at your insurance policy. And I dare say there's a lot of people that have also got homes that aren't up to scratch, unfortunately, because that's the nature of the things that people are doing without your safety checks, you know, for your electrical wiring and everything else. And lo and behold, they're underinsured, or their insurances have lapsed. And you know, God forbid that there's an accident in the home, and you end up with a you know, big ticket, a big bill at the end of the day because you were underinsured, or you weren't covered because you didn't check your policy.
Absolutely. And just in closing, it's worth noting, of course, that insurance premiums have risen dramatically. It's one of the contributors to inflation, because of course the cost of getting work done has gone up. So that's another reason why insurance is high. And the other point there is that when your renewal notice comes through, it is worth making some comparisons, because of course insurers tend to just throw the premium up a bit, assuming you won't notice. You'll be too busy to shop around, so it's always worth shopping around. But you're right, read the small print, make sure that you've got the cover that you want, and particularly areas, for example, where there's flooding risk or fire risk, you want to make sure that the policies actually cover the things that you need. Very, very important, particularly with the high costs of replacements and everything else. Edwin, as always, great conversation. Thank you very much. And we will do it all again next week. There'll be plenty of shenanigans to bring to the audience again, of course, because it always is a continuing story. It never stops. But I have to say that I stand back and think about this conversation. I think the politicians are just going around in ever-decreasing circles. Maybe one day they'll disappear out of their own you-know-what.
Let's hope so. Fingers crossed.
Okay, Wynn, see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.